So the topic of tonight's lecture is going to be about charity. This is the first major campaign, I'd assume, in Jewish history. First charitable drive was collecting money for the Mishkan. And there are some very important lessons in regards to giving charity that we learn from the donations that were given. Oh, way back in Parshas Truma, which is a month ago, the Torah writes that Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, tell the Jewish people, v'yichu li truma, take for me truma, a portion, a gift, donations. Now that language of v'yichu li would seem to imply that Moshe should take, meaning he should demand or require people to give. In this week's Parsha, in Parshas Vayakel, the Torah says, "Kumi yitzchem truma, take from them a portion or a gift, l'Hashem for Hashem. Kol nadiv liba yiviyah, any person who wishes to give, whose heart is motivating to give, should give a gift." And it is clear from the language of this week's Parsha that you have to be in a divlib, you have to want to give, and only those that wanted to give actually gave. The commentators take note of this, and some suggest that there were people appointed at the, I don't know if it was specific sites or whoever was arranged, whoever was accepting the donations, to make sure that the people giving the gifts were giving it because they wanted to give it. And they would ask the people giving if they were really, you know, this was done out of their full heart and this is something they wanted to do. Others suggest that the kol nadiv levi yivyeha, that the people who wanted to give had to give the gift directly rather than send the money through a third party, because it would the people accepting the gifts would be unable to discern if the motivations were pure, if they couldn't interview the person who was actually giving the gift. So we have a clear requirement, and this was a clear directive given to Moshe to not force anybody to give gifts. And the arrangements set up for the donations were as such. So why then does the Torah write in the beginning of Parshas Truma that v'yichu li truma, you should take for me a gift? So Moshe Feinstein explains that this taking wasn't a taking from the people, but this was a message Moshe was supposed to tell to the Jewish people. Take for me means take for me that you should take it from yourself wanting to give it to me. That you should make sure that when you're giving it to me, that this is something you want to do. And you should view it as something which is not a burden on you, something that you feel is worthy to do. So v'yichli truma is a message not to Moshe, but Moshe should tell the Jewish people, take from me a gift, and take from yourself that it should be for me, not done out of either competition because your neighbors are giving a gift and you feel that you have to participate, or out of guilt, but you should take a lilishmi, me for my own sake, as Rashi says, that you should be doing it for the proper motivation. So this would seem that the ideal way, and this is would seem to be obvious, that the ideal way to give charity is that gift should be given because a person wants to give the charity, wants to create the institution that is going to be teaching the Torah or going to be a house of study or a house of prayer, or wants to give the gift and wants to give the charity to the needy, whatever that charity may be. We find a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara writes in Maseches Pesachim that if a person gives charity, however, sell zul tzedaka, that the person says this amount of money should be given to charity, b'shvil shi'ichi b'ni, so that my son should live, if a person has a sick child and does it as for a specific merit, or simply because he wants reward in the world to come. The Gemara says, Harizat Sadagamar, this is a perfectly righteous person. Now, this doesn't seem to work with the fact that we have a principle based on a Mishnah Avos that a person should serve God not because he demands reward, but he should serve God because he feels that is the proper thing to do. So the Tosas answers that this is not really a contradiction. A person could want it to be a merit for a specific cause. However, even if that cause doesn't necessarily come as he wants it to be, he still doesn't regret the gift. So his motivations are still pure. Now, the Rabbeinu Hananel is one of the earliest of the era of the Rishonim. This is Rabbeinu Hananel, I believe, lived before the year 1000, sometime in the 900s. This is right at the changeover from what we call the era of the Gaonim to the era of the Rishonim. Rabbeinu Hananel writes that the correct language of the Gemara shouldn't be tzadik gemar, it should be tztaka gemar. It should be a person who's giving charity, a person who gives charity, even if the motivation for the charity is for some side reason, still, that is tztaka gemar, that is proper tztaka. Although he's not necessarily a fully righteous person, that tztaka is still proper tztaka. And the explanation for this is the... when a person does a mitzvah, if a person were to eat matzah on Pesach and do that for the wrong motivations, so he hasn't accomplished much. Whereas if a person gives charity, even if his motivations aren't necessarily pure, at the end of the day, that cause is being helped. He has benefited those that are needy. He has given money to create institutions or to maintain institutions that are worthwhile. So at the end of the day, even if his motivations aren't pure, still the charity is an effective charity. Although, as we'll see, charity can be much more effective if the motivations are also done for the right reason. But what seems to be is that we can divide charity into a person doing things into the motivations that motivate the person giving the charity. And we could also divide the source or the place that the money goes. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes something interesting. He says that, in his opinion, if a person were to give charity without wanting to give charity, this is something that Hashem wouldn't want to command him to do. When Hashem said, "Be equally truma," in the beginning of Parshas Truma, take for me, for my sake, for the proper motivation, that should be the reason you're giving charity. He understands that Hashem only wants people to give if they're going to give properly. And if you're going to give for motivations that are not necessarily the proper motivations, for honor, out of guilt or whatever other reasons a person may give charity, that is something that Hashem really desires. And therefore, the effect of the charity is diminished, as we will discuss. We have another beautiful idea in this week's parsha. And just to elaborate this on this in a second, the Torah writes in the beginning of towards the beginning of Parshas Vayakel, Vayavo Hanashim Al Hanashim, which is translated in the Chumash I have in front of me, the men came with the women. Now, the correct Hebrew for that should be Vayavo Hanashim Im Hanashim, the men came with the women. Al Hanashim, on the women, is a strange use of words. So, commentators explain, one explanation for this brought, is that Al Hanashim is the women came while wearing the jewelry. And what they were trying to show is that they weren't disgusted with their jewelry. They hadn't, you know, sworn off all beauty and all connection to the physical world. They still enjoyed their jewelry. They still liked their jewelry. But they had found something that they felt was such a good place to give the jewelry to, the Mishkan, the tabernacle, that they were willing to give up of their own pleasure. So proper motivation is not a person who goes through a personality change and suddenly cuts off all tie to money and decides he's gonna lead a life of utter simplicity and he wants to divorce himself from the physical world. A person can give charity. A person can enjoy the physical world, as the women who still enjoyed their jewelry came wearing their jewelry, but were showing that they had found something to do with their jewelry that was even better than what they had previously enjoyed with their jewelry. So this is just an idea expressed in how pure the motivations of the people, particularly the women, giving the donations to the Mishkan. Okay, now, so we'll discuss these two points in charity. The idea of one of the charity, the effect that the charity does, and also the motivations behind a person in which he gives charity, and that we can expand to other mitzvos, but primarily we'll focus on that's effect in the giving of charity and what that caused for the Mishkan. In Parshas Tetzaveh, the end of Parshas Tetzaveh, two of the objects of the Mishkan, which are discussed, are the Mizbeach Hazav, the golden altar, which was the altar on which incense was burned, And this is, the Torah describes this, the burning of the incense in connection to the lighting of the menorah. The Torah says that the incense is offered every morning. The incense is offered every morning when the lamps were cleaned for the menorah. And then the next pasuk writes that in the evening, the incense should be offered again when the lamps are lit. So the Torah says that in the morning the incense is offered, and the incense is offered the Torah says that the incense was offered in the morning and the incense is offered in the afternoon, and the Torah connects this to the lighting of the menorah. The Netziv explains that the incense represents gemilas chasadim, acts of kindness, charity, and the menorah, the light of the menorah, represents the Torah. So the idea of wisdom being represented by light is something which is a concept found in many places in Judaism. Light is something which allows people to see, allows people to understand their surroundings. Wisdom allows people to understand the world they live in. Smell, reach nichoach, the pleasant scent, allows a person to enjoy his environment. And gemilas chasadim, kindness and charity, makes the environment that a person lives in a pleasant place to be. The connection between kindness and charity and the menorah, and the reason why the Torah connects these two, is because the success of Torah can only be found in a place where there is benevolence. Only if there are people willing to support Jewish causes, willing to support Jewish education and Torah study, can we have successful Torah study. So the Torah puts the two together. Now, the Netziv asks a question. The Gemara writes in Masachas Menachos that the first time that the incense was offered, the Torah was offered, was at night. So why then does the Torah describe Aaron first lighting it in the morning and then in the evening? It should be in the other order. It should first be in the evening, as it was the first time that it was offered, and then in the morning. The Netziv says that this is an analogy for charity. He says a person's charity is counted in his ledger, so to speak, based on how effective it is. So a person gives charity, so to speak, to a scholar who is attempting, or to a budding student who's attempting to become a scholar. And that person, the analogy for that would be the night. He's starting out, he's still in the darkness, he hasn't achieved the light that he will hope to achieve at the end of his long period of studying. The success of this scholar will, how successful that scholar will be the merit that the person supporting him will get. It proves this from many sources, that the giving of charity is recorded as a merit depending on how successful it is. So therefore, the Torah writes the day, because the reason why we give charity, which is connected to the study of Torah, is because of what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to accomplish the light that comes at the end of the journey of whatever we're trying to do with our charity. And the reason why it historically happened first at night is because that is the order in which you have to give the charity. You have to give your charity hoping that it will be successful. And if you are successful, you'll have reached your goal. But the goal of that is ultimately what you'll accomplish with the charity. This being the case, we see that a person can give charity and it not being very successful. A person can give charity and not much will become of it. There's a story I heard once, I believe it was with the Panovich Rav, Rabbi Yosef Kahaneman. He met a very wealthy person who lived in, I believe, Switzerland. And this person had lived through the Holocaust and suffered greatly. And after the Holocaust, he settled in Switzerland and made a very large fortune. So the Panovich Rav went to ask him for a donation. And he said, listen, I suffered a lot in this world. I'm very upset at God. And I'm not planning on giving any charity to any causes. So the Panovich Rav told him, said, you know, that this is not a very wise idea. You know, you'd like some merits for your future existence in the world to come. So he said, oh, Rabbi, I took care of that. I wrote in my will that whatever I leave over should go to Bible study in Israel. And I'm going to enjoy all my money in this life, and I'm going to get merits in the next world. What ended up happening is the executor of his will was a Catholic lawyer. And this Catholic lawyer read the wording of the will and called up his local priest and asked him, I have money for Bible study in Israel. Would you like to open a center of Catholic Bible study in Israel? And the money all went to the Catholic Church. The Panovich Rav said that the lesson from that is you can't beat the system. If you try to give charity for the right motivation, you will then be successful in giving it to proper causes. If a person does not donate for the proper motivation, then his money will be less effective. There's a story set over with, I believe, Rav Chaim Volozhiner, that there was Chaim Volozhiner was the dean of the Volozhin Yeshiva, and there was a person who was a consistent and regular donor to the yeshiva. In any case, one day, Chaim Volozhiner is going through the ledgers of the yeshiva and sees that this person hasn't donated money in a while. So he sent him a letter, you know, why'd you stop donating to the yeshiva? And he replied to him that, the yeshiva had some sort of fundraiser, used to go around. And this fundraiser had bought some sort of fancy wagon or carriage because he was trying to look like give himself a more professional air. And this donor said that I see the money that's, that I go to the yeshiva may not necessarily be going to the best causes. I see you're buying, carriages for your fundraisers to look nice in. And I want my money to go directly to studying, not to these, extra expenses. So Chaim Volozhiner told him the following. He said, the money that comes from the pure sources goes directly to the need, the most important needs. There are donors who give, for whatever ulterior motives that they have. And those donors, their money ends up going to these peripheral needs. Because you're a person who seeks to give money for the proper motivation, rest assured that when your check goes to the yeshiva or your donation goes to the yeshiva, it is going to the most important functions of the yeshiva. So a person can even give money to a proper institution, and what that money goes to, it can be, it can be the paper towels by the sink, or it can be to pay for books that the students are going to study. So even within this, we connect the motivations that a person gives his charity with to the place that the money ends up in. Now, this idea, just elaborate on this for a minute, that a person's motivations should always be for the proper functions of a mitzvah. There's a very important point which the Rambam discusses. The Rambam says that the philosophers say that a person should do positive actions and do mitzvos, whatever philosophers call mitzvos, because he wants to do them. Now, the Rambam asks that it seems from reading various statements of Chazal, of the rabbis, that this is not the truth. The Gemara says that the more painful, the more difficult a mitzvah is, the more the reward is. Now, if one should want to do mitzvos, then that shouldn't be something that's painful. He quotes a Sefra Taras Kayanim that writes that a person should not say, I don't want to eat non-kosher food. A person should say, I want to eat non-kosher food, but God told me not to eat it. The Rambam says that we categorize mitzvos in two parts. Mitzvos, which a person understands the logic of, which a person would come to the conclusion without Hashem necessarily having to command him, such as charity, kindness, that a person has to want to do. A person has to train himself to want to help others, to desire to help others, to enjoy helping others. Whereas mitzvos, which we would categorize as chukim, as laws of God, without any obvious reasons, now one can study the chukim and discover the wisdom of the Torah, but these are nobody would come to the conclusion that one should not eat milk and meat together without the Torah having told him to do so. So on those mitzvos, a person should say, I would like to eat milk and meat. I'd like to eat cheeseburgers. However, Hashem commanded me not to do this. The Sfarno actually says this is a verse in the Torah. In Parshas Re'eh, the Torah says, in regards to certain non-kosher foods, the sochlu, you should not eat them, manita v'lachol levanacha acharecha, so that it should be good for you and your children, ki sasa hayasher b'enei Hashem, because you will do what is just in the eyes of God. The Sfarno says that we wouldn't come to the conclusion that we have to keep kosher. That is a rule in the Torah. Now, we can study it and understand why the Torah wants us to do this, but primarily the reason we're doing this is because Hayashar Be'ini Hashem, that is what Hashem wants us to do. And we should do it even if we would desire to eat non-kosher food. We should say we're doing this because that's what Hashem wanted us. However, in regards to mitzvahs like charity, once again, charity is something that a person should work on himself to want to give the charity and be happy to give the charity and enjoy helping those that he helps. Now, getting back to the Mishkan, we find in this week's Parsha incredible repetition. The Torah repeats, you know, with a lot of small nuances and small changes in the details and the nuances, nearly the entire Parsha's Truma and Parsha's Tetzaveh. The Ramban writes that so dear to Hashem was the giving of the giving of the materials for the Mishkan and the creation of the Mishkan that the Torah repeated this to express the love that Hashem had for what the Jewish people had done. What did the Jewish people accomplish with this incredible act of donating to and creating the Mishkan? So we have a Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara writes something which seems to be very strange. The Gemara records a debate between Rav Chanina and Rav Chiya. That Rav Chanina and Rav Chiya were discussing their actions and what they had done for the sake of the Jewish people, and which of their actions were more effective at preserving the tradition and at keeping the Torah, the keeping of the Torah and the Jewish people. So first the Gemara says that Rav Chanina said that my pilpul, my complicated and wonderful lectures, were so powerful that did something. The Torah will not be forgotten from the Jewish people. And Rav Chiya said, no, I did something much more subtle, but what I feel is more effective at a tactic at preserving the Torah and the Jewish people. The Torah will not be forgotten from the Jewish people. What did I do? Rav Chiya said that he planted flax. From planting the flax, he created nets. From these nets, he caught deer. He fed the meat of the deer to hungry orphans. He took the skin of the deer. He turned it into parchment. He wrote Torah scrolls on them. He wrote Mishnah on these parchments. And he used these to teach Jewish children. And from this, he was successful. Now, what was he doing? Why did he go through this whole hassle of planting the flax, creating the nets himself, catching the deer? Why didn't he go to the market, buy parchment, buy ready-made Torah scrolls, ready-made Mishnahs, and teach these to the children? Why did he go through this whole hassle of creating everything himself? So Rav Aaron Cutler writes that there's a tradition from the Vilna Gaon that things done with a pure motivation have a nitzchius. That is something which will last. If a person does something with the full and proper motivation, that is something that is so effective that mitzvah will last. Baron Cutler writes that not only do our actions have effect in this world, our intentions, although we may not see them, have a very strong effect as well. And if a person does something with a full and pure intention, that mitzvah may be such a powerful mitzvah that the effect of that mitzvah may last forever. And that was the message Rav Chiya was telling Rav Chanina. Yes, your lectures and your Torah is great and is beautiful and is powerful. But at the end of the day, the fact that I was simply teaching children and everything about what I was doing to teach children was done with the best motivations that I could muster and the strongest lishma, the strongest desire to have everything done for its proper sake, that is something that I felt was the best that I can do, that the Torah would not be forgotten from the Jewish people. And this is something which we find about the Mishkan. The Sforno writes that the objects of the Mishkan were never captured by the Gentiles. It is recorded in the Gemara that the Mishkan was hidden shortly before, several generations before Yerushalayim was captured, and the Aron and the other objects that were created in the Mishkan were never captured by the Babylonians. They were hidden, according to tradition, somewhere, I think, if I remember correctly, under the Temple Mount. Shlomo HaMelech had created a chamber, and these objects were never found. The Sforno writes that the first temple, which King Shlomo had built, was built by craftsmen who were non-Jewish. And these craftsmen were, we can assume, to be wonderful craftsmen, yet their motivations was this is a job. They were hired to do it. It wasn't their temple. It wasn't their Beis HaMikdash. Whereas when the Jewish people created this Mishkan, the Jewish people were giving the donations for the best motivations. The craftsmen were doing this because they wanted to create a place for Asheras HaShchinah where the divine presence could rest. Because all the motivations in the Mishkan were done for the most pure motivations that a person could have, the creation of the Mishkan was done in its most proper fashion. The Mishkan never needed to be repaired, and the Mishkan was never captured by our enemies. The Sfarno writes that the beauty and the wealth that was found in the first and the second temple were much greater than the Mishkan. And yet the Mishkan had this kiyum, had this nitzchius, had this eternity that was not found in the first and second Beis HaMikdash. Furthermore, he says, the Asheras HaShchinah, the divine presence resting on the Mishkan, was stronger than it was in the first and second Beis HaMikdash. So the message that we take out of this commandment that the Jewish people were given to donate to the Mishkan for the best motivations, and the fact that the Mishkan was, that this mitzvah was fulfilled properly, and the Torah repeats the construction of the Mishkan again in this week's Parsha, and Parshas Vayakha and Parshas Pukute emphasizes this point. But this is something which is pertinent not just to charity, but to any mitzvah which a person does. That if a person does something for its pure motivation, he can be assured that the mitzvah will be more effective, and he can be assured that whatever he has done, it will be something which lasts and something which can be part of the eternity of the Jewish people. And any questions or comments or discussion points? All right. I guess I didn't say anything controversial this week. All right. Shabbat Shalom. Good Shabbos, everybody.
Shabbat Shalom. Good night.